Well, it's great to be here this evening, and I was Joel's substitute earlier this year, you're right, but I did step in and score a goal, I think, or I don't know what happened, but we won, that was the main thing, but I don't think I'm going to get that call this year. I think you're going to be fit and ready this year, aren't you? But no, it's lovely to be here, it really is, because like I mentioned briefly beforehand, my life really changed, and it was in 2001 that my real life began. You know, it was a moment where I just said, you know what, I'm fed up with the way my life is and something's got to change. You know, the way I was going, there wasn't no happiness there, but I was at the top of what I was doing, you know, and I will share a bit about that. But I'll let you know about my family. So I'm married, been with Trish now for 23 years. We've got three children. Nathan, who's 20, he goes to Chichester Uni, enjoying the social side of uni a little bit too much, so we're trying to rein that in a bit. I've got a 16-year-old daughter as well, Atlanta, and she goes to college. She plays football. She's a footballer in the family. She plays for Chelsea Ladies, or under-17s, and at this moment in time, she's with England, and I think on Tuesday they start their tournament. They've got a European tournament. And the running joke in the house is that she's got more international caps than her dad. So, but it's not hard if you haven't got any. So, you know, she only had to get one. And I've got an 11-year-old son as well, Cameron. And he likes surfing and everything to do with sports. So he's the baby of the family. We've got two dogs as well. We've got chocolate labs called Ben and Jerry. So that they make up the family. So we still live close. I should say I live in Portsmouth, but I don't. I actually live in Southampton. And I know, forgive me. But that there's a rivalry, Portsmouth-Southampton, big rivalry. And I just live in Southampton, so don't mention it to any Pompey fans, okay? So still live there. That's going to be our home. That's going to be our base anyway. But originally born in London, born in East London. And really, that time in East London, for me, I lived in a high-rise block of flats, lived on the 17th floor of those flats. Life in London, in a city, really, all the problems that you'd expect. My parents tried to guard me from those problems in a big way. I used to think they were being too strict with me, but really it was love. It was real love, because they didn't want their little boy to fall into the hands of all the troubles that are around. But I didn't see that, you know. So I rebelled a little bit, not too much, just a little bit, because I knew when my dad said no, he meant no. So I only pushed the boundaries a little bit. But I love sports, really loved all sorts of sports. And because my parents are from the Caribbean, cricket was the main sport that my dad liked to play. So he tried to get me involved in cricket. And to be fair, for a little while I was okay, but then he bowled the ball at me once and it hit my leg and it hurt, you know, and I said, no more, never again, done. So I just pursued football. Football was the main thing for me. And when I was 8 years old, I watched a game. It was a cup final, Tottenham versus Man City, and one of the guys scored an amazing goal, and I thought to myself, that's what I'm going to do. 8 years old, I made a decision, I'm going to be a footballer. I didn't know how to become a professional. I didn't know the route. I didn't know about being scouted or anything like that. But what I did know is that I love football. So I made my first football pitch in my mum and dad's flat. So it was the corridor of the flat, bedroom door being one goal and the front room door being the other goal. And my little teddy bears were the opposition team. So I used to win. You know, that's how I used to win my games. I used to score lots of goals. But that's where it all started. And you know, in all of that, the dream was always, you know what, one day I'm going to make it. I'm going to just work hard to make it. At 12 years old, I started to play for a Sunday team, which was difficult because my parents, church every Sunday, we had to be there. And to be honest, church for me was the last place I wanted to be, because it was a cold building. It was usually just us there. You know, it weren't great. It weren't a great atmosphere. But I just thought to myself, well, my friends are all playing football outside. I want to play football. So my dad and myself came to an agreement that I'd play football one Sunday and go to church the following Sunday. But we weren't the best team, you know. One week he came to watch us and we got beat 18-0 or something like that. Well, that was a good result, honestly. That was a good result. And he said, look, you can play for them all the time, because you're going to have enough stuff to do with church that you'll still be part of the church life. And at 14 years old, I got scouted, I got selected by Charlton to go and train with them. And even though I went there, I still didn't know whether or not I was going to go any further, because so many boys head into that direction of football and so many boys are disappointed, really disappointed. And I'm just going to stress now, this isn't a football story you're going to hear. This isn't a football, this is a life. This is a life journey. Every person in this room would have gone through some of the things that I've been through. And it might not be dressed up as football. It might be dressed up as something else. So, you know, you'll hear the football stuff, but it's life, what goes on in life. So anyway, 14 to 16, trained with Charlton. Get to 16 years old, and my dad sort of says, Lynn, whatever you do, you leave school with your GCSEs, because you never know what's going to happen in football, whether you'll make it or not. But at 16, I got the opportunity to sign an apprentice contract with Charlton, so, which was great, because now I'd be training every day with Charlton. But on the back of that, West Ham came knocking at the very last minute. West Ham came. Harry Redknapp was the West Ham manager, and they wanted me to go and sign. And I said to my dad, Dad, what should I do? What should I do? Should I stay with Charlton or go to West Ham? Everybody knew that if West Ham knocked at your door, you went. You know, you don't ask any questions. And I said, Dad, what should I do? And for the first time, my dad didn't give me an answer. He said, boy, go with your heart. And I was like, Dad, just tell me yes or no. You know, I don't want that heart stuff. Just give me what I should do. So, but I knew in my heart I needed to be loyal. I needed to be loyal because they gave me a chance. So I signed for Charlton, and I had 2 years as an apprentice, cleaning toilets, you know, cleaning the showers, looking after your pros kit, all to build your character. At the time, you don't think it is, but it's all to build your character, because we were told quite often, somebody's always watching what you're doing, and if you can't do the little job off the pitch well that you're given, how can you be trusted on the pitch? Which is a life skill, really. It's a real life skill. Whatever you're doing, do it well. So I took that on board very quickly. I thought, no, just do it well. And again, I wasn't the most confident of people in the football world. I wasn't confident in the dressing room. I was a young boy in a man's environment. So I had to take on some of the things that I thought would help me fit in. And I wasn't comfortable. You know, on the inside, I didn't like some of the things that I was saying or doing, but I knew it fitted into the culture of the football world. At 18 years old, I got offered my professional contract, and I was like, yes, I've done it. I'd achieved the dream. What's next? I thought I'd be on telly. I thought I'd be playing lots of games, a full stadium and everything like that, but nothing. For the first year, nothing at all. And then I made my debut at 19 years old, made my debut. Great. It was live on TV. It was against Birmingham City. Realistically, I should have been nervous because I was the youngest player on the pitch. I should have been nervous. Had no nerves. Played the game. We drew 0-0. Worst game ever. And they gave me a bottle of champagne because I was man of the match. But I was so nervous, not because of the game, because I had to do an interview afterwards. And I thought to myself, oh no, cameras, Linvoy, how are you going to cope? And honestly, I answered everything the wrong way. I told all the secrets that the club had no money, you know. they had to look out for the young players. All the young players are going to get a chance because we've got no money. You know, it's like, oh no. And the guy was asking the questions. He's thinking, oh, get a little bit more here. So he was, you know, he's egging me on a little bit. And in the end, he just said, Linvoy, thank you so much. I was like, oh, great, you know. So they never let me do an interview after that. Anyway, I played 6 more games in that first team. Then I got dropped from the team. And then the following year, just turned 20 years old, the following year, Charlton said, Linvoy, we don't need you at the club no more. We're going to let you go. Now, for me, my dream's over in a moment. Just called into the manager's office, Linvoy, no more contract. I'm like, I didn't know what to do. Just become a dad. Nathan was just born. I was living with Trish. My life had just fallen apart around me. But the thing was, I was in a position that I'd seen many of my other teammates go through already. So it wasn't as if this was a new thing to happen. It was new for me, and I didn't know how to handle it. I struggled, really struggled. I felt I was worthless. I felt that as a failure. I'd let everybody down. You know, I was going to be that next stat that failed in life. You know, and I had all these emotions, all these things. And I had about 10 minutes in tears. I had 10 minutes of thinking, what next? What now? And I thought, you know what? I'm going to have to get a job. I've got to look after my family. I've got to get a job. So then I thought, you know what? A job, 9 till 5, footballer's hours, 10 till 2. You know what? I'm going to stay in football. You know, I like the football hours better than the 9 to 5 job. But the amazing thing is, at the end of every season, over 500 footballers are told throughout the country that they're not wanted anymore. 500. And I was part of that 500. So I was in a difficult place, really difficult place. And this various ages are in this group as well. But then I did get a phone call from a manager of a team called Barnet. And Barnet were a couple of divisions lower than than Charlton. And I had to make a quick decision. The manager phoned me and he said, Linville, we'd love to sign you. And I said, sorry, but I'm going to go to another club because they give me a chance to go and train with them. So I'm going to have to go and train with them. And the manager knew it was going to be difficult to persuade me to not go to this club. So he said, Linville, give me 2 minutes. I'm going to speak to the chairman and then I'll get back to you. So he called me back. He said, Linville, look, we're going to offer you a 2-year contract. What do you say? And I said, look, I'll be there in 2 minutes. You know, I said, forget that other club. But you know why? Because I thought, I'm not going to be loyal. You know, football's not been loyal to me. You know, Charlton let me go, so why should I be loyal to football? So I went to Barnet. Barnet were in London. I didn't know this before I, you know, agreed to sign the contract, so that was a bonus for me. So I went to Barnet, had 3 years at Barnet. For 18 months, I was not rubbish on the outside, but rubbish on the inside. I was worried that I'd mess up. I was worried about what people were saying, what the media would say. All these things were going on inside me, and there was no place for me to tell anybody because I didn't want to seem weak. So I kept it all inside, and my performances outside, nobody could tell that I was struggling inside, nobody at all. And the biggest thing that overrode all those emotions and fears was anger. Anger was the biggest emotion that got me through every game. I became a horrible player on the pitch, you know, because I thought nobody's going to take advantage of me again, and that will hide away what's actually going on. So I became a very, you know, a naughty player on the pitch. And I had 3 years, and then I left. I got sold to Reading, and Reading was good. Reading, we moved out of London for the first time, had a lovely home, couple of cars. Atlanta was now born. So on paper, our life looked great. Our life looked really great. But I didn't really... Those things were nice, but the best thing for me about signing for Reading, they're in the same division as Charlton. So I had an opportunity to play against Charlton again, and that opportunity came around very quickly. We played Charlton, and we beat them. So, you know, so I was happy. I was real happy. The manager of Charlton was the same manager that said I was rubbish. Well, he didn't actually say I was rubbish. He said I could leave, but all in my head... That's all I could hear. He said you were rubbish. That's why they've got rid of you. So I got to play against him. We play Charlton. We beat Charlton. After the game, I see the manager, and I try to give him a handshake. He doesn't really want to shake my hand, but I grab his hand, and, you know, he's trying to let go, but I hold on a little bit more, you know, milk the moment. And just as I was about to give him my 3 years of pain... I was just about to tell him everything that had been going on in my life for those 3 years. He said, Linvoy, well done. I was like, oh, great. He said, Lin, brilliant. You've proved us wrong. You've gone on and had a decent career. We want to see you push on. All the best. I was like, oh, God, thanks, you know. Because in reality, he didn't know he'd given me 3 years of pain. He didn't know any of that. He just made a decision for football. And Linville was part of that decision. You can go, the next lot come in. Conveyor belt of life. You're not good enough, next person in, next person in. So I went home that evening, I made a decision that evening. You know what? I've chased everything, still not happy, so I'm going to chase money now. Because money makes you happy. The world says it, that money makes you happy. So I chased money, didn't make me happy. But then the turning point in my life where I started to question life came when Trish started to suffer with depression. Now, when this depression came, we didn't know how to handle it. We didn't know, you know, what it looked like, but we just knew that she was struggling. And I realized at that point, no matter what you've got in your life, you can have everything. But if one person that's close to you is ill, don't matter about all those other things. You want that person well. And I'd say for 5 or 6 years, we struggled with this. And why, with struggling with it, we were making decisions that weren't made from a place of, this is going to be good for us. We were making them out of desperation. And I decided to leave Reading. After 3 years at Reading, I decided to leave. And I was thinking, you know, life, I don't get it. I really don't get it. Because by now, I'd been ripped off by a couple of agents, lost a lot of money because of these agents, been let down by a couple of football clubs. And I thought, you know what? I've given football everything, and I'm done. I'm actually done, and I'm prepared to quit. I was 27 years old when I made that decision to quit football. So I left Reading, had nowhere to go, didn't know what to do. We'd rented a house. And then I got a phone call from another manager. It was the Portsmouth manager. He said, Linvoy, I would love you to come and sign for us. So I said, okay, you know what? I'm just going to go there, get as much money as I can, get to 35 and play golf. That's it, done. And I said, if Trish gets better on the way, that's great. But, you know, we're just going to get as much because that will get us through. And for 2 years, that's what I'd done. And then Trish's depression went, you know, took in into a really bad place. We ended up buying a horse, you know. And before this, we never owned a cat or a dog. So for Trish to want a horse, I thought, well, you know, I looked at our garden. I thought, our garden's not big enough for a horse. But the reality of getting this horse was she found some friends. These friends took advantage of her, broke her heart. We moved this horse to a new place. At this new place, they were Christians. And to be honest, when they said they were Christians, I said, Trish, whatever you do, just stay away. You know, stay away. And she said, they're all nice. And I said, Trish, they always start off like that, but it will change. But I wasn't scared of the people. I was scared of what the building, I was scared of what church represented. I was really scared of that because of what I'd experienced as a kid. And I thought, there's no relevance. Anyway, we went to this church because they invited us. And we, you know, in the end, we just said, yeah, we'll just go. We went to this church and it was amazing. It was really amazing. But I still didn't want to get sucked into this church. So I just, you know, played the, well, yeah, it's all right. You know, don't get eye contact. Yeah, it's all right. But then 6 weeks after entering that church and hearing about Jesus, I realized that my life, everything I tried to place into my life to find peace, to find happiness, was in Jesus. And I'd asked a lot of questions in the 6 weeks of going to this church. I asked a lot of questions. One of my teammates was a Christian. You know, we ended up sharing a room together when we traveled to away games. He pulled out his Bible, and I was thinking, this is weird. No footballer reads books, and he's got a Bible. You know, it's like, I'm thinking this is a big setup. But the reality was, it wasn't a setup. There was, you know, I was chasing after God. I was chasing in such a way. And then I made a decision. One evening, the guys that invited us to church, they came round, and I made a decision that evening to accept Jesus into my life. Now, I thought to myself, by doing this, by recognizing that, you know, the way my life was going wasn't right, that actually I needed Jesus, I thought, you know what, this sounds good. I'm going to get Trish with me, you know, because I don't want to do it on my own. So I turned to Trish, who was sat in the chair, and I said, Trish, you know, we can accept Jesus together. We can say this prayer and, you know, start this journey with Jesus. And she said, Lynn, I've already said the prayer. I was like, you know, where'd that come from? You know, it's like, she's already said the prayer. And what had happened, a week before, she'd been given a book. She'd been away with the kids. She'd been given a couple of books. And one of them was a Why Jesus book. And I said to her, what happened after you said the prayer? She said, the depression gone. So I was like, oh, that's great, you know, because we'd done everything. We tried everything to, you know, for that depression to go. So I said, right, if you're in, I'm in. You know, that's it, I'm done. So I said this prayer, and at the end of the prayer, I opened up one eye, you know, looked around, opened up the other eye, and I thought, oh, God's going to come in the room in a minute, you know, big hand, Linvoy, you're the man. Nothing. You know, it's like, oh, great. And to be honest with you, I just thought that would be it. I thought it'd just be Sunday morning and then playing games. I didn't want to tell the lads in the dressing room I was a Christian. There's no way I was going to tell them. But in the end, I had to, because I had an amazing moment with God. And I'm going to shorten it right down, but I got healed. I got healed instantly of a knee injury, and I met God. You know, I met God at that point. And from there, I recognized that my life was never going to be the same again. And every opportunity I had to speak about Jesus from the platform of football, I took that opportunity, because he changed me. He really changed me. And I'll give you three quick examples of how he changed me. My mindset was, if anything bad happened to me while I was playing, I would get that person back. You know, I would get that person back. But my mindset had to change, because I had to play with a heart that was playing for God. So I started to play for Jesus. One of the reasons I started to play for Jesus, because Harry Redknapp became the Pompey manager. First thing he said was, "Linvoy, we're going to ask you to leave the club." And I thought, Harry Redknapp, if I see you in an alley, I'm going to get you, you know. That was what was going through my head. But the chaplain of the football club said, "Linvoy, you cannot do that." He said, "You play for Jesus, forget Harry." I was like, "But he's not going to play me." He said, "Play for Jesus." And I said, and he gave me a scripture that just said, "Whatever you do in word or deed, do it for God." So I thought, all right then, okay, all right. I still want to get Harry, but I know, okay, I'm going to play for you, God, play for you. Started to play for God just in training, just in my training sessions. And then Harry said, "Linvoy, your attitude's been spot on. Want to keep you at the club." And inside I went, well, I'm playing for God, Harry, not you, you know. But on the outside, I was like, all right, gaffer, yeah. Then 2 weeks later, he put me in the team. Then that season, we get promoted to the Premier League. By the end of that season, I got voted Player of the Year by our fans Player of the Year by fans across the country. And there's nine Player of the Month awards that are given out, and I won seven of them. But that was all right. But the reality was, I was able to, in the press, say that it's not me, it's Jesus in me. You know, I was able to say that, and the press were doing that. The press was putting it out there and putting it in a real way. Last thing, the Christian player at the club with me, he left me on my own. He's like, oh no, you know, I'm the only Christian in the club, and, you know, the players are on my case. After a year of standing strong and saying, you know what, I love Jesus, the players used to ask me for prayer. You know, they went from calling me, "Guy, you're man of God, you know, God squad and Bible basher," and to, "Linvoy, could you pray for us?" And I'd be like, "Yeah, should we pray now?" They'd be like, no, go off with the God squad and pray. You know, wouldn't let me pray there. But then after 3 years with the club chaplain, I used to meet him once a week. After 3 years, there was 8 Christian footballers at the club. You know, and and then we started prayer groups before games. We started prayer times before games. And Harry once said, because I had to ask Harry if it was okay, he said, "Yeah, Linvoy, no problem." He now thought I was okay, you know, he didn't want to get rid of me anymore. And I said, "Could we start?" He said, "Yes, no problem." And one of the prayer times ran over just a little bit, and he came out, he said, "Where are they? Where are they?" And the steward said, "They're in there praying, gaffer." And he said, "Give them 5 more minutes then." So, you know, Harry was cool with us in the end. But the reality was, my life changed. It really changed. It really changed. And in a way that I can't tell you, but being up here tonight, if you'd have said to me 10 years ago, this is what I would do, I'd say no chance, no way. But because Jesus has changed me from inside out, I will speak about him, and I will go just for the one. I really will. I really will, because it's real. It's the real deal. So finally, 3 decisions I've made, 3 amazing decisions I've made. First one is accepting Jesus into my life and starting that journey with him. Second one, getting married to my wife, Trish. And the third one was a tackle I made on Wayne Rooney It was in the penalty box. I tackled him, and the referee didn't give a penalty. You know what? And any time you tackle Wayne Rooney, he usually gets a penalty. So I thought that was a good decision. But thank you so much. I could have told you lots more, but thank you so much. And, you know, if you have got any questions, please do what you've got to do, and I'll answer them the best I can. Thank you.
Brilliant. Yeah, let's sit down, eh?
On the sofa.
Great, here we are. Cozy chat. Thanks, Limbo. That was brilliant. Hopefully, we've got some questions that you guys have been texting in. Yeah, we've got some. So, do you want to put it up on the screen? We'll go for some questions. First question: what was it like living as a Christian with a lavish lifestyle? Was it hard walking close with God whilst having lots of money?
Yeah, it's a good question. Personally, because I came into the Premier League really late, so I didn't have a lot of money coming through. So when I was able to get it, and I was a Christian at that point, I really felt God say, the extra that you get, just put it away. Just put it away, save it for a rainy day. And I was able to do that. But I was, you know, I was tempted to do things. It was easier to do things, you know, in terms of going out and buying whatever I wanted, but I realised that some of the decisions I was making from a place of, do I really need that? You know, do I have to have that? And we also recognised that money that we were getting, the extra money, that was what God had blessed us with. So we really believe we were blessed to be a blessing and used it in other ways as well. So it kept us, you know, I think if we had it before we became Christians, we could have gone a bit crazy.
Do you see that in the dressing room when people get the money, the paycheck, yeah, at the end of the week or month? Or
oh,
whatever,
I'll tell you what,
some
of the cars that I used to see in that car park. When I first joined there was Ford Fiestas and stuff like that. By the time I left, it was Ferraris, you know. So and that was a kit man. That went to the players. But the thing is, you can't. You know, for me, I would never criticise those guys for what they want to spend their money on, because at the end of the day, if that's in your hands and you don't know any different, you're going to, you know, buy those things which you probably wouldn't have been able to buy.
Brilliant. Next one. Who's the best players you played with and against, and who was the hardest to mark?
Right, okay. I'll go with the hardest to mark, and that was Thierry Henry. Yeah, he was unbelievable. I wouldn't clap. If I could have got close to him, I would have just tripped him up or something. He was so... I used to know what he was going to do, and I still couldn't stop him. Most of the time, it ended up in the back of the net. So the best I played with is too many. You know what? I used to turn up for training at times, and I used to think, oh, my word, there's Jermaine Defoe. You know, oh, there's Sol Campbell. And I think, there's little Linvoy from Stratford, you know. But the reality of it was, I played alongside some great players. But the one that probably stood out was Paul Merson, because he came to the club at 33, and he could have just picked up his wages and not done anything. But he played every game so well, and he was a game changer. He was a natural game changer, and he made me look silly in training sometimes. So he was probably the best.
Brilliant. Next one. Linvoy, do you think Portsmouth will be a league club in 2014-15?
Is that from a Southampton fan? I hope so. I really hope so. You know, the reality of it is, and this is in a serious way, there are a lot of people that come into football who don't actually care about the community. And I think once the club disengages with the community, then there's always a problem. And that's what happened. And who picks up the pieces? The fans, you know. If Portsmouth don't exist in the league, they will always exist in some form, because the fans will keep that club going in some way. So, you know, that's the harsh side of it, because, you know, the football club answers a lot. There was a baby boom 9 months after we won the FA Cup. But on the other side of that, when we lose games, domestic violence goes up. So you recognise the importance of the football club in that city doing good things.
Next one. Have you ever played with any other Christians during your career? What was that like to play with them?
That was good because we were all at different places. It was nice because there's new Christians as well in terms of, you know, coming to the club not knowing Jesus. And by the time they left, they were following Jesus. It was a different atmosphere in the dressing room. It was a real, you know, it was a good atmosphere. There's a nice feel in there. And it was nice because most of the talk in the physio room and stuff like that was about Jesus. You know, conversations were just sparked from nothing. And you'd have, you know, 10, 11 guys just saying, well, I don't know if this Jesus is real. Prove it. You know, and all of a sudden you have these conversations. And even if, and I always say to the guys, we're not there to you know, get them in a headlock and say, you need to believe. But I said, we just got to introduce Jesus to them and then they'll start on their own journey. And I know a number of the players that came to the club would never have experienced anything like that. Praying before games, that never happened. And now I could name 15 clubs where a lot of these players have left and joined after us who've gone on to start prayer groups there. So you can see that the world of football is going to be, you know, a huge place for God to do his stuff.
Right. I'm going to sneak in a cheeky question of my own at this point. Is it, because I know there's a number of guys here who will be, you know, playing football regularly and that sort of thing, as a Christian, maybe not as a Christian as well. When you became a Christian, obviously you're still playing football and stuff, did you find it hard? Because I think when you're on the pitch, physical, guys, you know, going at it, it's like, is it hard to sort of not overstep the mark, you know, and how does that play out, being a Christian, making your decisions, your tackles, your playing fair and that sort of thing? Does it bring the best, I think it brings the best and worst out of people at times, so how do you manage that as a Christian?
Well, to be honest, before I became a Christian, I'd only been booked, and then when I became a Christian, I got sent off twice, so weren't the best example, was it? But no, I realised, because I had the chaplain who was an ex-pro as well, I used to ask him some questions, and I said, look, now I'm a Christian, do I have to become a vicar? You know, I thought, well, that's what you do, don't you, when you're a Christian? And he said, no, Lynn, he said, your gift is football. Well, he said, arguably it's your gift, but he said, your gift is football, and he said, it's how the heart you play with. You know, are you playing for yourself? Are you playing for Jesus? Are you playing for the fans? And that's when Harry made that decision to sell me, I had to make a decision to play for Jesus. And once I put him above everything, my football career just took off. It really took off. So, you know, I had to be more self-controlled. I had to change my thinking, but I didn't change it by me saying, well, I need to do better. I you know, changed it by reading the Bible and applying the things, the advice from the Bible into my own life on the pitch and off the pitch.
Got time for a few more questions. Were your teammates supportive of your unusual holidays, i.e. China, not Dubai? What? I didn't get this question.
Oh, I know it.
Thanks for scoring against Crystal Palace.
Okay. I didn't score many goals, but I played it back a few times to make it look like I did. you know what? The lads were really supportive. That question there, to raise some money, because we started a charity called Faith in Football, and to raise some money to support an orphanage out in India, we walked the Great Wall of China. There were 16 of us, three former Pompey players, a Bradford player, a Christian as well, and a support team, and we raised 100,000. So we got that support because the guys recognised that, you know what, they're doing something different with their lives, and that's what got the questions, you know, flowing about why we were doing it. So I got good support by that, from that, and it was amazing, an amazing experience.
That's great. Cool. What's it like to be worshipped? talk a bit about that, because you know, first Premier League game, when you got, you know, the big league, you step out on the pitch there, and you got all these fans, people cheering your name and that sort of thing. Talk us through that experience.
Yeah, it's nervy. It's nervy because, again, I came from a place where I wasn't expected to play in the Premier League. You know, I had, you know, people on TV on Match of the Day saying Linvoy will never play in the Premier League. I had the local press and the national press saying it as well, that Linvoy will not play in Harry Redknapp's team. So when I went out and played my first game, I just thought, you know what, Lynn, just do it for God. Whatever you do, just do it for God. And if it's good enough, because you're giving 100%, that's great. If it's not, at least you're giving 100%. So I took, you know, when people started to recognize that Linvoy is getting on with it and he's still there, there was a worship element coming towards me, but I just said, you know what? I know it's not me. Physically, it's me, but the person inside has changed. So I was able to give that glory straight to God. And people thought it's a little bit weird. Why does he keep saying that? You know, but I was saying, because it's true. I said, I'm not doing anything different. I just head the ball and kick it. You know, I haven't got no skills, really. I haven't done anything. That hasn't changed. But because I'm playing from a place of real peace, I was able to say, I know you think it's me, but actually it's Jesus in my life that's allowed that freedom. And that was the reality of it, you know, that people saw that. So that worship never fell on me, and I just sort of, you know, kept it away to a certain degree.
Because you must have seen, you know, with the guys around you, how it affected them. And yeah. I guess some of them would have handled that better than others and that sort of thing. How did it affect the guys and things like that?
Well, you see it now. You've got a couple of high-profile ex-players struggling with life after football. And those are the guys we know. I can tell you now, there's thousands of players who are struggling with change in terms of how football has finished, and they don't know their identity, you know. And I think that's what it comes down to. And I'm not just saying I only can give you that because it's the football world, but I can imagine in other streams of life that when people's lives change from one place to another, there's an identity thing in there. But fortunately enough, you know, God's put me in a place where I'm able to meet some of these players and share my journey through retirement, through the next part of my life, and I always bring it back to Jesus. And, you know, again, I'm not trying to make them do anything, but I'm just trying to let them see that if you look to the man himself, then there's a way out, and that's all I ever do now.
Brilliant. We've got time for one more question. Linvoy, do you want to play for the CSK football team? Please, thanks, because we have a really nice new kit.
Where do I sign?
Well, it just so happens I actually manage one of the teams. So, Linvoy, it'd be great to have you on board. We'll leave it there, thanks. Great. So, let's just say another thanks to Linvoy for being here.
Thank you.
It's great to have you.
Thank you.